Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Good morning. It's a Thursday coming to you live from Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today kicking off right now as Morton Anderson missed short field goal, still the most significant on-field single moment for most Jacksonville Jaguar fans, Tony, and a yard shorter than the most of the proposed PAT changes if they start kicking them from the 15-yard line or snapping them from the 15. Although, I guess now you snap it back 8 yards instead of seven, right? It used to be seven yards plus the end zone to figure out the distance of the kick. I think it's eight is more the standard now. So maybe even a couple of yards shorter than what extra points may be if the competition committee rules that way. We'll get into that coming up today. It is that kind of year, time of year where you hear about proposed rules changes in the National Football League. What are you laughing at?
No, just when does minicamp start?
I know.
That's what I'm laughing about.
Well, you know, it's funny because we're sitting there. The question of the day, we might as well throw it out there right now, is simply, would you be in favor of a rule change that made the snap on extra points come from the 15-yard line, which are three different proposals all centered around that with some variations to them in terms of where you would play the two-point conversion from if you opted to go that way and whether or not you could score if you were the defensive team on a two-point conversion or, say, a blocked extra point and run it back for two like they do in college right now. And so... That's our question today, simply, would you be in favor of a rule change that does add that degree of difficulty to extra points? You know, as we sit here, we try not to reuse the same questions. We try not to go down the same road as much as we possibly can. And I guarantee you that every year, possibly with the exception of this last year, because we didn't do an all sports show last year, we did an all football show basically since last April, we've done every summer, which rule change would you be most in favor of in the world of sports? A few of the sports are. In fact, we may have even done it last year, but just from a strictly NFL perspective. So in trying to avoid that, I got a little narrow on that. I've already been called out by at least one person on Twitter for having the most boring question of the day that we've probably had. He equated it to the boredom of a current extra point, which is basically automatic. Yes or no question.
Yeah, and I guess they're trying to change that, which is fine. If they don't want it to be an automatic thing for the point, and you're trying to give teams incentive potentially to go for two instead of kick the extra point and make it a real football play, whatever. I mean, I get what the discussion that the NFL is having is. In the end, football is fine. Like it's fine the way it is.
If they didn't change the game from 20 years ago, we'd probably think it was fine as well, but we know they're going to tinker constantly with this. And this would, some people say, I don't want them to change it simply because that's the time I know I can go to the fridge and I can start my bathroom break a little bit early. You know,
sure.
I get a few extra seconds on the commercial break, whatever the case may be.
And that one in a thousand where you come back and realize they missed that extra point.
What, they missed the extra point?
And now you're in a rage.
You'll take that risk, though, typically, because it is one in a thousand, or at least seemingly one in a thousand.
And then every time anybody scores, you're like, see that point? That extra point? It's going to come back to haunt us. I'm telling you it is.
Oh, it's always. You start chasing the missed extra point.
That's right.
Early is always the question as far as that goes. It's also, in addition to rules change discussion time of year for the National Football League, it's now becoming quickly, let's get everybody in our draft class signed as quickly as possible. Jags up getting Neil Sterling signed early yesterday, and then James Sample announced that he had signed his contract, or the team announced that he had signed his contract, the fourth-round pick out of Louisville. First Louisville Cardinal ever drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I probably would have guessed there was at least one somewhere along the line in that period of time. And we're hopeful that if his schedule permits, we'll be able to catch up with James after the program today, and we'll bring you that conversation on tomorrow's Jaguars Today program. But, you know, listening to Gus Bradley after practice the other day, Tony, I know you had to leave to go get on the air out of TPC.
Mm-hmm.
But on Saturday, basically talking about Sample and how he looked and talked about how he liked his versatility and that, frankly, in his system, he feels like you've got to do both. You got to play close to the line and you got to play off. You got to, you know, it's almost like a mirrored safety system to some degree. But the question is, you know, everyone says he's got the sideline-to-sideline ability, the speed to cover the deep third of the field. We'll find out, right? I mean, there's you know, plenty of guys you think you look like on film can handle it. It's not just the speed. It's how quickly you play. In other words, do you react or do you just play instinctively and recognize how quickly will he recognize NFL formations and be able to decipher those things if he is, in fact, the guy who beats out Sergio Brown for that free safety spot, which I think still we think that's what the competition's going to be.
No, I do think that's what the competition's going to be, and unless Josh Evans can throw his name in there as well once we get to camp, or if another safety like a DJ Swearinger gets released that changes what that backfield could look like for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll see if something like that happens over the course of this offseason. I doubt it's going to, but those are the things that would change this discussion. I think James Sample metrically measures up, right? Like they say he's the best cover safety in the nation statistically last year. When you're, and that's kind of like a Pro Football Focus argument. So that's looking at the metrics of football and saying he was the best, he graded out the best coverage safety in the nation last year, which means basically this is to me the biggest step of metrics this team has ever taken in the draft. It's taking a guy who plays strong safety and saying, because of his ability to cover, we think he may be able to play free safety in the league, so we're going to take him in the fourth round when we could have taken making sure we're getting Rashad Green or doing whatever else we want to do because we do feel good about that player too. But we feel like this guy could project as a free safety in this league based on the metrics we have, not based on the position he played in college, because he played strong safety in college. That's what he did during his time, his short time there at Louisville. So to me, this is the biggest metrics limb this team has stepped out onto in the 3 years that they've been here.
You know what, though? I think we need to get away from the idea that the fourth round is a big limb to step out on. It has been for this team because the roster has been so bad that many years you're looking for instant help, maybe even a starter coming out of the fourth round. And as you hope to increase the talent level on your roster, fourth round picks become not insignificant, but a lot less of a sure thing, certainly to make an impact in their rookie year, and not necessarily looked at as core players going forward outside of core special teams guys. So I think, you know, when you say it's a limb, it is the fourth round. And yes, they in the case with Rashad Green, they certainly were interested in him. Dave Caldwell made that pretty evident. And the fact that we can look at it back in hindsight now, everything fell into their laps. They got everything they wanted out of those last couple picks before the seventh round and getting Bennett to fall as well into round six. So it's not as much of a risk, but
I think the limb is about the position you're asking him to play.
I know what you're saying.
Not where you're drafted. I think it's more about this is a guy who played strong safety. We think he's a free safety. I think because of the metrics that he put up during his time in college, I think that's the biggest step we've seen them take with something like that. I think that, look, you can make an argument that are they doing that a little bit with a guy like Dante Fowler? Sure, because nobody plays Leo in college, right? Like, you're projecting a guy into a position that nobody plays at the college level. So there is a little bit of that there as well, but I don't think that's as big as here's a guy who plays a different position in a defensive backfield that you think can play another one because of what you see a little bit on tape. You're going to ask him to do something he hasn't done when he gets to the NFL level because of what you saw on tape. I don't think the fourth round pick is the bigger deal to me in that. I think asking a guy who played strong safety, played it really well, but switching him to free safety is the bigger deal in that because of the metrics.
Granted, but I get my point being, in the fourth round, like they did that with Denard Robinson, right? In the fifth round, they said,
sure,
let's take a guy who's a quarterback, mostly a quarterback, and let's try to get him to be an offensive weapon slash now a pure running back in the National Football League. My point being, yes, it's a reach or a projection in terms of his position, but it's mitigated by the fact that it's the fourth round. You know what I mean? I mean, you wouldn't typically take a guy and ask him to play a completely different position. I grant you what you said about Dante Fowler Jr., but it's like what Gus said after the draft or before the draft at the pre-draft luncheon. We look for traits. We don't look for scheme fits because typically colleges are not running your scheme, and that's where the scouting staff makes their money. You know, I heard the guys this morning on the drill talking about Tom Cable and how he was complaining yesterday about how college coaches offensively are doing players a disservice, because other than wide receiver, the blockers, the quarterbacks, the running backs in these spread offenses are not being prepared for the NFL. Well, it gets into a question of what are their jobs in as college coaches? Is it their job to prepare guys for the NFL? In part, that is, but that's more so at a traditional football factory.
Right, that's the lip service you give to kids when they're coming onto your campus.
You want to win.
Right, when they get there, you're being paid millions of dollars to win football games on that campus.
And even for those guys who, a lot of them have dreams of the NFL, the reality is that the majority of them won't make it to the National Football League out of college football. So for them, is it the main goal to prepare you as best you can? If you're a player of that ilk, you typically tend to gravitate towards the football factories. That's why you see the same conferences and the same schools typically.
Right. That's why you go to Alabama
year after year after year.
Because they're playing a pro style, they're coaching a pro style, and it's translating directly to NFL success. And there's not a whole lot of colleges that are doing things that way right now.
If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the phone number to do it. That's also the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. If you're so inclined, you may text us or tweet us a proposed rule change you'd be in favor of more so than this extra point shenanigans. But there are three proposals. We'll kind of go through the specifics of them coming up. But the question today does ask you, would you be in favor of a rule change that has extra points being snapped from the 15? In other words, basically about a 33-yard field goal instead of the little chip shot that it is right now. A lot of people think a 33-yard field goal is a chip shot by NFL standards. Also, history of the Madden curse. We'll take a look back. Odell Beckham Jr., the latest to test fate as he wins the fan vote over Rob Gronkowski yesterday. Mel Kiper's got a big board out for next year. No, we're not going to break it down piece by piece, but we might take a peek at it along the way. And a little bit more on the Jags starting to piece together the draft class, getting those guys under contract. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. The way to tweet us, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field, continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Live at Everbank, Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, spinning the dials. Someone wants your job, Tyler. Caleb on Twitter said he had a thought for the show at jags.a and more. I'm not sure what that is.
Huh.
We'll go with that. He said, thought for a show, change my view day, where people call, tweet, text, or Facebook their unpopular opinions, and we argue why they should change them. Wouldn't that be easy, though, if they're unpopular opinions?
Hot takes.
You would think it'd be easy to
so he basically wants to have a, hey, send us your terrible ideas so
and
that we can
tell you why they're terrible.
Berate you for a couple hours that
That's
day show.
Basically the show. That is the show, Caleb.
I bet there's a lot of people that would enjoy that just immensely.
There could be a I always told you, and someone's just going to take the idea, because I've been threatening to bring this back. I told you this. My favorite radio segment from when I first started, when I had my first sports show back in the 90s, we did the thing called the flip side, right, where we literally flipped a coin. We had a hot take topic, whatever it was, and we'd flip a coin on the air, and you'd have to argue one side or the other, and you didn't know until it came up heads or tails what you were going to get.
Right.
So I like the idea of just arguing for the sake of arguing, right? Of whether or not you actually believe. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to try to back up my beliefs, but I also like just a good argument as
sure.
well. So if it were done in the context of we're just going to disagree with whatever take you have, it would probably get uncomfortable for us and for the listener at times, but wouldn't be the first time.
No. I mean, we could save, like, the phone call bad takes you feel like you have to go after right away. But, like, on Twitter or Facebook, when
we could save those?
When we see them, we can, like, save them for a show at the end of the month. All right, it's bad take day. And we just go back through the whole laundry list of stuff that we've gotten. And it's like, here it is from blah, blah, blah. He said, this is why you're stupid.
Like, that is actually pretty good. Bad take Tuesday or something like that. We've let the Friday top five kind of go by the wayside.
It's been a busy couple weeks.
It has been a busy couple weeks, right? And so we try to prioritize when there's stuff going on. By the way, David Garrard in tomorrow. Ryan O'Halloran was hopeful to come in today, but had to switch some things around in his schedule, and he had something to do coming up at 11 o'clock. So hopefully back in next week. Rule changes that have been proposed. Here are the three proposals that will actually be voted on, and we'll get to your phone calls here momentarily at 641-1010. The Patriots submitted a proposal basically that said you snap the extra point from the 33-yard line. If the team decides to go for it and kick the extra point, there's no faking it. Why would you fake it from the 15? You just line up and go for two at that point.
That whole fake thing.
And if you wanted to go for two, the ball would still be at the 2-yard line. What would the whole fake thing? Well, you sound like you're annoyed by fakes.
Well, when this idea came up that we can't move it to the 15 because it eliminates the fake extra point, when in the world is the last time you saw a team fake an extra point?
Oh, I'm not worried about them faking the extra point or not faking the extra point. I'm just saying you wouldn't have that anymore. And not that you have it much now. I'm not arguing that you have much now. Are you just trying to start this right now?
No, I'm not. It's just when that whole point got brought up, I was like, who is faking the extra point? Like, who, if they want to go get the 2 points, is saying, you know what we need to do? Field goal formation. Nobody is doing that in the NFL. I can't remember the last time I've seen fake field goals, right? But I can't remember the last time I saw a team line up for an extra point and intentionally run a fake field goal play on that extra point. It's an asinine idea.
Well, I guess because the advantage, the risk, I mean, what is the percentage you're going to make it? And you're trying to gamble for 1 point.
Right.
The 1 point you have is almost in your pocket. It's almost automatic. Whereas a fake field goal, okay, typically they're longer anyway, and the risk that you're going to get the three is greater, and then you're gambling for an extra 4 points, potentially.
Correct.
So I could see why they do that. Next, the Eagles submit a proposal that's basically the same thing.
The Tebow rule.
Kick it from the 15. Could be the Tebow rule. If the offense went for two, they would go from the 1 yard line, and also the defense would be able to score on a fumble or interception return of the 2 point conversion. And I would think, why not then also, yes, they also, if the defense blocks an extra point, that's part of it. And so anytime the defense came up with the football,
it's a play.
It was a live play.
It's just a regular play.
It doesn't just end. And they can run it out and get 2 points potentially on that. But the key difference to me is going from the 1 yard line as opposed to the 2 yard line.
They're trying to incentivize the 2 point conversion.
Right, which makes a lot of sense to me. And then the final proposal from the competition committee itself is kind of right down the middle. You would still go, you'd kick it from the 15, you'd go for two from the two, but you could also run those back. I think that's more likely to get passed. I think, you know, it's radical enough for the NFL to move the kick back to the 15 if they in fact do it, and I'm not convinced that they're going to do it in the end, but then to also move the 2-pointer up to the 1 yard line, I think, you know, you kind of joke that that's the Tebow rule, but some people think that Chip Kelly, in the back of his mind, knowing that he went for two a bunch at Oregon, he likes to go for two, he's going to propose this. Well, let's say it passes. Who might be a really valuable guy to have at the goal line in a run-pass option-type scenario from the one than Tim Tebow? Tim Tebow, tough to stop from 1 yard out. I'm not saying, you know, that I don't know what the percentage is, but I just, you know, going back to when he was playing that half season in Denver and certainly going back to college, he was almost impossible to stop in those little pistol formation type, you know, semi-shotgun situations. He'd take a peek at his best shot, and convert it almost 100% of the time. It wouldn't be that way in the National Football League, but
no,
you get some creative plays and not make it so simplified, and you know, get some options in there. It's not the craziest idea I've heard.
No, it's certainly not, and of the three proposals that are out there, basically, that are going to be discussed over the course of the next couple days, if they're going to change the extra point at all, which, again, I don't need them to, but if they're going to change it at all, Philadelphia's is the one that I would like to see come into play, because, look, if they want to try to make the extra point more difficult, I guess 33 yards is more difficult than 20, right? Technically, it is more difficult than 20, but that trying to encourage teams to go for two instead of kicking the extra point, I kind of like the idea of incentivizing that 2-point conversion to the point where teams would be interested in going for it a little bit earlier in games than they have been previously. You're adding another decision by a coach, which I kind of enjoy in the game because it gives you something else to discuss, you know, in the middle of a game, as opposed to you're only going for two in NFL games now when you feel like you have to. And while we've had discussions over the past 10 years over when a team did it and they shouldn't, or they should have and they didn't, like, we've had that discussion, it changes if Chip Kelly and a handful of other teams, every time they score their first touchdown, go for two.
Right.
Like, there's not even a thought about it. They just go for two, and they make it eight or they make it six right off the bat, and it changes the strategy for that other coach and what they're going to be doing throughout that game. I like the idea of that.
I do, too. And I like that. And the reason he does it, it's so early. If you miss it, you can easily overcome it. Particularly, you know, Oregon was expecting to score a bunch of points, and so are they in Philadelphia with the pace of play that they play, and offense has not been their issue. And you do, even though it's that 1 point early, Tony, you do make other coach think about it and wonder, do I go chasing it?
Yeah, we joked about it after the missed extra point that happens every now and then. You chase that point for the rest of the game.
And honestly, I would be, if they move it to the one, I'd be a proponent of going for two. It has to work out more than 50% of the time. But except in end game type scenarios, I want to go for two all the time, right? And the kickers would hate that, but I'm not too worried about
right.
what the kickers want, honestly. I want what's best for the viewing public. I don't want the XFL. I don't want craziness. Peter Kay at Black Dog Express says, you want fun, dunk the football over the crossbar after a touchdown before being tackled, make that 2 points. That's straight out of the XFL. I mean,
that'd
it's not,
be crazy.
But it would be.
This
right?
mad rush.
I mean, like that NFL Street game. You ever play that game?
Yeah.
Back in the day?
It
seems like something that would be in that game.
I had a friend who actually helped design that game with EA.
Really?
Yeah.
NFL Street?
Yeah. He works down there now. He works on Madden.
Really?
He graduated to Madden.
What does he do?
He's a game designer.
He designs Madden.
Yeah. Designs Madden.
Like, what does that mean when he designs Madden? Does he get, like, the NFL playbooks and try to figure out how to incorporate plays into the game?
He's more the engineering side of it. So he's, like...
The game physics?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. He's been doing it for a couple years now.
Is he making a boatload, or is he a grunt, or is he a slave that they churn these guys
I'm sure
out?
He's doing better now than he was when he was working on NFL Street.
You think Madden's probably an uptick as far as that goes? Yeah, you're probably right on that. All right, let's get to the phone, 641-1010. Let's start with Doug this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Doug. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Bad take Tuesday, That's an idea.
It could be. It could be if you're in favor of that.
That's all right. Don't make it a bad take Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, based on some of my previous calls, I may be a permanent member of that bad take Thursday. But extra point. They have this thing called Wikipedia, and I looked up why we even have the extra point. And do you guys know the history behind why there's even an extra point in football?
Give us the 30-second capsule version, please.
All right. It goes back to old rugby rules in which rugby, originally, you scored a touchdown, so to speak, so that you could then try to kick the point through the goal. In other words, you were rewarded the extra point by getting a touchdown. The whole goal of rugby was to kick through the upright. So you had to get a touchdown to get that extra point. And at some point, football took those rules and reversed it, right? And we made the touchdown, you know, the goal, so to speak, and then you get an extra point. I guess that was just a nod back to the old rugby rules. So I never knew that. I didn't know that that's where it came from, but as far as a fan goes, and this is purely a fan's perspective, I just leave the extra point where it is, and for two reasons. One is, it's kind of fun as a fan to just celebrate, hey, we got an extra point, you know, you score a touchdown, and it extends the joy of scoring a touchdown. In other words, so you celebrate, we're in the end zone, and then we get an extra point. It's just fun for fans to be able to cheer twice off of an event like that. The other reason is, as a Jaguar fan, don't make it any harder for us to score points. It's already bad enough that we get in the end zone so little, so I don't want to see you move anything back. And I just like the tradition of it. I like the idea that just leave it as is. It's a fun way for fans to celebrate, and why monkey with the rule?
All right, Doug. Appreciate it, man. A little history lesson there. And I think it may be, Tony, some small part, they had to justify the name of the game. It's football. We got to do something with the foot. In other words, you know, it's not football. Otherwise, what would you have called
it? Right. While they're calling football over in Europe, and we say, hey, we're going to have football.
We better use a foot
in
some regard. But, I mean, look, that's one way of looking at it. It certainly would cause, you know, if you're down one and you score that touchdown late third quarter, and you think, all right, we tied this thing up. Maybe you didn't tie it up, you know. But at the same token, maybe you're on the other side. Right? And you get that joy. Okay, we just gave up a touchdown. Now they're going to tie us up. Oh, no, off the upright. And there would be more of that. How much more? Not 100% sure, but it did go. The percentages are bound to go down. And I do like some of the suggestions that people say make it hash mark significant. In other words,
a rugby style thing.
Right. In other words, if you score next to the sideline, running up the sideline, well, you'd take it into the nearest hash mark, and you'd kick from that angle instead of centering it every right. single time on the extra point.
Yeah.
Because the extra point has become almost automatic. I mean, it's one of the most automatic plays in sports, right? I mean, what is more automatic than the extra point? I'm not sure.
Nothing's more automatic than the extra point. I mean,
not much.
It's a nothing in the league is 100%, and that is as close to 100% as it gets.
All right, let's get Gary up here next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Mike, Tony. The rule I would change in the NFL, I hate the defensive holding automatic first down. Just make it 10 yards. That's ridiculous. A team having 3rd and 20 and get an automatic first down, I think, is I've never liked that rule.
Yeah, what if you did, instead of automatic first down...
It does stink.
If it's 3rd and 20 and the guy holds 13 yards downfield, make it a spot foul, you know, and advance it, replay the down from the spot, something like that. Because it is, you know, you get a... Boy, you saw a lot over the last few years of just frustration with... You play good defense, you play good defense, guy gets a little bit of jersey... Automatic first down.
Right.
You know, so I'm with you to some degree on that. Mary is up next here on 1010XL. Good morning. Hello.
Hi, thanks. Hey, are you there?
Good. What's up, man? Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for not making fun of the fact my name's Mary. I appreciate that.
I didn't at all. So can I ask you the origin of your name? Not a lot of guys named Mary.
Well, when I was born, I was an ugly baby. According to my dad, anyway. And we had an ugly Aunt Mary, who was my mom's sister. And my dad had a sense of humor. He liked to, any chance he could get digs in at the in-laws, he would. So he named me Mary. And so when people would ask how, you know, did you end up with the name Mary, I'd have to say, well, it was my ugly Aunt Mary that I looked like. I resembled her. Yeah.
All right.
Making it more and more difficult not to make fun of you, Mary.
Soldier on, Mary. What do you have for us today?
Well, I don't think I'm ugly, but my dad thought
tell
I was
you.
Ugly.
You have a nice voice, however.
Okay. Well, thank you. So just a couple points real quick. The guy that just called as far as the history of the NFL, you know, the NFL wasn't hatched and played 100 years ago like it is today. I mean, it's going through scoring evolutions. Back in the earliest days, a field goal was, I think, 4 points, and a touchdown was only one. So, and the other thing I wanted to bring up is the extra point. I think it would be interesting if a position player had to kick it. Like if you had an offensive lineman or a safety or somebody, I think that would make it more interesting. And the last thing I wanted to bring up was, as far as bad takes go, throughout the country, the states are loosening laws on the use of marijuana. And municipalities, the federal government is pressuring municipalities to make it just an offense where you just write somebody a ticket for $25. So I'm just wondering, when do you think the NFL should begin to follow suit and kind of get caught up with the times here and loosen the restrictions on players using marijuana? I mean, after all, if someone lives, like let's say a player for the Broncos smokes pot, it's legal in Denver. And yet he's being punished for something that's legal.
Well, but also, I mean, there are a lot of supplements that you could buy at your local GNC that are legal, but they're prohibited because they're outlawed by the NFL for competition reasons. So there is
marijuana
precedence.
Is not a performance-enhancing drug, I don't think. I'm just
talking about in the general standpoint. And look, I'm more on your side of this argument than not. However, the NFL's point of view, I believe, is going to be, well, it's still federally illegal. Even though it's legal in Colorado and Washington State, they're not going to arrest you. If the feds wanted to do something there, if they were inclined to, they could probably prosecute you under a federal law there, and it's not legal in most states of the union. Again, do I think that eventually... I think eventually it'll be widespread legal in the United States of America.
Me too.
And I don't think we're that far off from that happening, to be quite honest with you. And when that point in time comes, I think it becomes more of a discussion, and eventually you're going to see it as like alcohol. Don't abuse it. Don't get behind the wheel, and don't drive under the influence. And if you don't, go on your own and do your own thing as long as you're not breaking any laws and hurting people. But that's not the point we're at now. And I grant you, some people think it is performance enhancing because some people think it aids in pain relief and recovery. Yeah, I'm not trying to get into the semantics of it. My point being, the NFL, it doesn't just bar illegal substances. So whether it's for performance enhancing or drugs of abuse, however you want to look at it, there is at least that kind of precedent that, you know, there are things I could buy right now, walk in without a prescription and buy that I could not use if I played in the National Football League or most other major sports.
Right.
So there you have it. Thank you for the call, however, Mary, and thank you for the story. I'm sure your aunt was a lovely woman. And so we'll move on from that. All right. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We'll take a look at the Madden cover curse. Has it ever really existed? Where does it rank among the best curses in sports? As Odell Beckham Jr. gets to test fate or tempt fate, as the case may be, this season as he beats out Rob Gronkowski in the fan vote. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. If you want to get on board, 641-1010, the number, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. You want to get in, 641-1010. You can call the call-in line, of course, or text on the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line. We've been using that a lot lately. Odell Beckham Jr., that wackadoo hair style of his.
Yeah.
Whatever. All the kids are wearing it like that these days.
Yeah, it's working for him.
Yeah, these kids on the soccer team that, before they come to practice, they like to mousse their hair, spike it up.
How old are these kids?
10.
Yeah.
I had one kid. He went down. Good kid, man. He's a really good kid. A great player. And we have a little end-of-season tournament. So we had a game this past weekend. He was down in New Smyrna surfing. And he came back, and his dad, they got there a little bit late, and his dad goes, oh, man, I thought the game started at 9:30 instead of 9 o'clock. He goes, because we even went by the house to get the moose. I'm like, really? Got the moose. Hey, look, in high school, Tony, I degraded the ozone layer all by myself a great deal.
Yeah?
Trust me. I was into many a hair product, so do what you're going to do. Odell Beckham Jr. clearly does what he's going to do. What does the Madden cover signify these days? Obviously, it's a fan vote. It's a popularity contest to some degree. I think it's always in recent years when the fans have gotten involved in it, has had an attachment to fantasy football. Guys that put up big numbers for you.
Sure.
Right? Popular players, eye-catching players. I heard Jeff and Dan discuss this morning, and Jeff's point was clearly Gronk's the better player. To paraphrase him, I don't want to take him out of context, but clearly Gronk's the better player, but Odell Beckham Jr. for that one moment really just shows you how buzz and notoriety can play into this. I don't necessarily – look, I think Gronk is a great player, and I think – the thing he has going for him is he's clearly the best guy at his own position, right? Whereas I think it's a deeper pool of elite wide receivers. Is Gronk definitely better than Odell Beckham Jr.? I mean, Odell Beckham Jr.
from the moment he stepped on the field, he was unstoppable.
And what he did in 12 games last year. And that was one of the arguments. Well, a guy's only played 12 games in the NFL. Well, it's a popularity contest. He was able to become that popular. He wasn't that guy. Coming into the draft last year, he was a guy that, you know, was the third wide receiver selected. And, you know, not an unpopular guy, but certainly that catch propelled him and catapulted him into the public consciousness. But his week-to-week play kept him there.
If you project out his stats, right, for Odell Beckham, who caught 91 passes, 1,300 yards, 12 touchdowns last year, if you project that into a 16-game season, I'm not saying he would have put up these numbers, but you can't say he wouldn't with what you saw him do last year. You're talking about 120 catches, 1,700 yards, 16 touchdowns.
As a rookie.
As a rookie for Odell Beckham Jr. That's the kind of pace that
wait,
he was
he
on
adjust
last
to
year.
The league.
Right. He was electrifying. For the moment he took the field, he was electrifying. I mean, we got to see him live the one time here in Jacksonville when the Giants were here. The Jaguars came back and won that game. But that catch he made on the sideline where he did the little hop step back and then scooted to the side, it's like he's so quick. And that combination of how quick he was with how fast he was getting downfield and obviously
great hands.
His ability to go get the ball when it was in the air was maybe the best in the league last year with the 12 for the 12 games he was on the field.
Yeah, and look, it was a close vote either way. I thought the whole thing was just weirdly played out yesterday on ESPN, as obviously their marketing ties in with this. Madden's paying a bunch of money.
I saw highlights of it this morning. It looked awkward.
There was things such as a highlight of the, I mean, lowlights galore, right? They bring him out there, and Lindsay Zarniak, who I think she does a nice job.
You I know, do, too.
Nothing against Lindsay Zarniak. She's out there, and I'm sure this is not her idea. Some producer or somebody thought this was a great idea. They're standing up there. They're just killing time because they're trying to drag it out as long as possible until they actually make the announcement. Fine. All right. I get it. They're playing the ratings game and trying to keep you tuned in. And so you've got Gronk, and we all know Gronk's got the wild, crazy party lifestyle. And you've got Odell Beckham Jr., who we don't know a ton about other than his play on the field.
Right.
And she goes, well, while we have a little time, how about an impromptu dance-off? And they had no idea what she was talking. They're like, what? After a minute, Gronk goes, you want us to show you our dance moves? and then he goes, well, I know this one right here. And he starts doing this thing with his arm. But it was like, had they been into it? Had they been prepped for this?
Right.
Maybe. You'd have to have two guys who are really into it. Odell Beckham was trying to be too cool for school. Then he starts doing a little, you know, whatever. And it was just like, this is incredibly awkward. So apparently Odell Beckham had said on the last commercial break that he was exhausted and couldn't wait when this is done so he could just go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said Odell Beckham wins, and they bring out John Buccigrass because I guess they needed another person on
right.
the set for this. And they said, well, you'll be joining us on SportsCenter tonight to do the highlights. And he had no idea. And they're like, is that okay with you? And
right.
I mean, this is supposedly all planned out. Nobody's informed these guys, or they did, and these guys just in one ear, out the other. So he brings out what's called a shot sheet, and he says, this is an example. We'll do this, and I guess this is what's passing for content on ESPN, and here I am talking about it, so it's passing for content on this show. But he said, all right, let's go through. I'll take the first one. And these are the best five plays of Odell Beckham's career, okay, college and pro.
Mm-hmm.
So Buccigrass goes, okay, this is October, whatever. Odell Beckham versus whomever, makes a catch, cuts it upfield, da-da-da, fades the defense in the end zone. You know, basic highlight.
Yeah, it's a highlight.
Your turn, Odell. Odell stares at the sheet, and he just reads right off of it. Again, he's unprepared to do this, so I'm not trying to pick on the guy, but he's reading it. He goes, August or September or whatever date, you know, da-da-da. He goes, Beckham catches it, cuts to the inside, and they're like, that's you. In other words, say, I catch it. It was just incredibly bad. It
yeah.
was just really, really bad.
Like I said, I caught highlights of it this morning, and they didn't show him reading for his own highlight film. What they did show was him reading the highlight for the Coco Crisp catch.
Okay.
In left field, where he full extension dive, right, to go catch a ball in left field. And Odell's reading it. He's like, Coco Crisp in left field with a diving catch. And then there's like this 2-second pause, and he goes, what a catch. And I was like, this is the hot, like,
hey.
It struck me. I was like, this is what they chose to pull out of him doing highlights. What a catch.
I told you I was tired. I warned you I was tired. I mean, and that probably was the highlight. That was probably the best one. They try to force these things in. Just give him
he ad-libbed the what a catch.
Just give him the damn award. Just tell him he's on the cover. But no, Madden's paying a bunch of money. Hey, look, that check cashes very nicely. By the way, the Madden curse, there was a run, a period of years, consecutive years, when it, you know, it was a fun thing.
Seemed
and
to get somebody, yeah.
It did seem to get somebody every year, but much like the SI cover jinx, Tony.
Killed Peyton Hillis's career.
Peyton Hillis, Barry Sanders retired.
Right.
Remember he was like up in the upper corner of the one back in 2000? He's like, I'm done.
Yep.
I'm not going to tempt fate here. Mike Vick broke his leg. There are a bunch of them that went down like that. But the point being, you get on the Madden cover or the Sports Illustrated cover, for that matter, over the years, because you're having an exceptional above your norm performance. Those things typically don't last, right? Now, maybe it will if you're an all-time great player in the National Football League. You're talking about a season's performance.
Sure.
But really, with the SI cover jinx, you'd get on for a hot week. And then when you couldn't keep up the unrealistic expectations of what earned you the Sports Illustrated cover, I guess that was the curse or the jinx of Sports Illustrated, because you would revert back to your normal self the next week, like, oh, I don't know, 99% of every other athlete in the world who has that kind of career week or season. We'll see if Odell Beckham Jr. is able to keep up the pace. Pretty ridiculous. I would suspect he doesn't have 1,700 yards and 16 touchdowns this year. But I'm not going to say it's impossible
right.
for it to happen. But too many things could go wrong to just extrapolate those numbers out over a full season. I got this texter in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, said, make the extra point a choice of how many points you want. 40-yard extra point is worth 2. A 50-yard extra point would be worth 3. Anything shorter would be 1 point. So, in other words, you'd line up from whatever the shortest distance allowable is. Much like in basketball, you choose if you want to shoot a 2 or a 3-pointer. That's been suggested before. That's been suggested on field goals, too. It could work better, I think, with extra points, because the play is over, and now you get to line up the ball and assess your risk and how much you want to go for. But the counterintuitive aspect of doing it with field goals, a longer field goal is going to be worth more, so you may choose to take a knee on third down so as to not gain yardage and cost yourself the extra point you need in that circumstance. And it kind of, you always want the team, for the most part, trying to go forward and succeed. Of course, at the end of games, they do that anyway now, right? They kneel down, run clock, and set themselves up for a game winner. But I think it would make it a little bit more prevalent in that regard. All right, coming up, we've got this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and a bunch more. It's Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live at Everbank here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, lost in a lot of the Deflategate talk is the conversation about just how good the chances were going to be that the Patriots would be in position to repeat as Super Bowl champions in the first place. The Patriots have lost 4 of their top 5 corners from last season, including one of the league's premier elite players at that position, Darrelle Revis. They released cornerback Kyle Arrington last week. Arrington has now signed a 3-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens. Since many of you asked after DJ Swearinger was released, yes, the Jacksonville Jaguars did reportedly put in a waiver claim for the strong safety. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were awarded Swearinger off of waivers, but the Jaguars were among 8 teams who put in a waiver claim for him, according to Field Yates over at ESPN. The Bucs, Jaguars, Raiders, Falcons, Bills, Steelers, and Ravens all submitted waiver claims for DJ Swearinger.
Does it make you? It makes me wonder if Sipp's got that firm a hold on the job. Right? I mean, DJ Swearinger, by all accounts, a strong safety. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, not that you're not trying to improve your roster at all times. Doesn't mean that he'd walk in the door as a starter or anything. But, you know, people look at Sample and say that he could play free. Certainly looks like he could play strong safety. I mean, Sipp is a guy who I know is a very popular player on this football team, both inside the building and out. But you can't remember too many game-changing plays, many memorable plays. Now, maybe it's difficult to do that, period, when you got a team winning as few games as they have over the last couple of years.
Sure. And really, the play I remember from Cyprian is the one where he got concussed. I mean, that's the biggest play I can remember Jonathan Cyprian making here in Jacksonville. I think that you put in a waiver claim on a guy like DJ Swearinger because it costs you basically nothing. I mean, he's a second-round pick, right? So the money certainly isn't an issue with bringing in a guy like that.
And you cut him in training camp and you don't owe him that money.
Sure. And it may upgrade your position there at strong safety. Maybe not your starting position.
Sure.
But maybe you feel like it helps your depth at that kind of spot. So it makes sense for a team like this. Look, the roster is in better shape than it's been in the last 4 years, but that doesn't mean it's great yet. It's just better than it's been. It can certainly still be upgraded in spots, and we're waiting to see what's going to happen with a guy like Jonathan Cyprian. It's funny looking at that draft. A lot of questions still about those first two draft picks with Luke Joeckel and Jonathan Cyprian. Joeckel, I feel better about him this year because he's had a full offseason. We talked to him a couple weeks ago. He looks bigger. He looks stronger than he did last year when we had the opportunity to sit down and talk to him as well going into training camp. So I have some hopes for Luke Joeckel this year. I think Cyprian, in order to be allowed to play the position the Jaguars want him to, needs something in that other safety spot that they just haven't found yet here in Jacksonville. And they got 3 different guys to try it with this time.
All right, the game show continues for you, Tony.
Oh, boy.
Free money on the board for Fat Tony. No risk here. He's in the bonus round, ladies and gentlemen. All this talk about the extra points today.
Yes.
I looked up 2-point conversion leaders made in the National Football League. Keeping in mind that for long stretches of history, there were no 2-point conversions in the National Football League.
Came in what, like 94?
Yeah, most of the guys on this list are going to be extremely recent guys here, although Gino Cappelletti is credited with 4 2-point conversions, and he played 1960 to 1970. I don't know how that that whole thing works, but Tony, without looking, one player in the National Football League is a Hall of Famer. He's a running back, and he has scored 7 2-point conversions, the most of any player. Can you name that player?
A Hall of Famer running back. In the modern era.
Obviously so.
Running back.
Who is in the Hall of Fame, hence the designation Hall of Fame running
right.
back.
Marshall Faulk.
Very nice. Ding, ding, ding. Tony's up a dollar now. Putting the dollar at risk,
because
I know I'll get it back right here. Which NFC wide receiver who played primarily in the 1990s, NFC South wide receiver?
No.
I'm narrowing it down for you here.
Yeah.
Okay, is the only guy with 6 2-point conversions, exactly 6.
You killed me because I knew what my guess was going to be.
What was it going to be?
It was going to be Chris Carter.
Chris Carter has 5. Very nice.
But NFC South, I have no idea. Musa Muhammad.
That's not a terrible guess. It was Terrence Mathis of the Atlanta Falcons. We're back down to 0 now. And now, final thought for you here.
Uh-huh.
I got 2. Now I got 3. There are 11 guys who have scored 5 2-point conversions. Good for third place. Chris Carter's among them. One active running back in the NFC has 5.
One active running back in the NFC.
He's the only active player.
Can I get a division on this one?
Sure. No, you can't. I didn't narrow it down too much. All right, yes. NFC North.
North. 4-T?
Yeah, I was going to see if you go AP. You don't get the money on that one because you had to have a hint. And 2 former Jaguars are on the list, scoring 5 2-point conversions in their careers. Who you got?
My guess would be Mojo and Ernest Wilford.
Your guess would be incorrect. Keenan McCardell.
Okay.
And Willie Jackson.
Really?
How about Willie Jackson? And then finally, Tony, someone who works in this building with us is on the list, tied for third. Currently works in the building with us. Who you got?
Jeff Lagerman.
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
think offense. We see him all the time.
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. He loves to play golf.
I do not know.
Marcus Pollard.
Really?
Yes, Marcus Pollard. Who is, I don't know what his official title is, but basically the kind of the player
liaison or something.
Right?
Yeah.
Helps him, you know, with
2-point
the
conversion trivia.
2-point conversion trivia. We're rolling deep in it right here. We're rolling deep in a lot of stuff here on
Jaguars
today.
You don't get a Terrence Mathis or Musin Muhammad mention every day.
You got Kerry Collins, Marvin Harrison, Todd Heap, Edgerrin James, Rob Moore, and Hines Ward also on that list. David Garrard, by the way, with 3, good for a tie for 27th all time. The strange oddball 2-point conversion trivia. We'll take a look. Yes, we'll even look a peek ahead. Why were the Jaguars interested in adding a pass rusher? One of the reasons was, Dave Caldwell said, not a lot of premium pass rushers available in next year's draft. In fact, as of now, they only have 1 pass rusher graded as a first-round talent in next year's draft. We'll take a look. Mel Kiper put his big board out, updated that yesterday. And who might that pass rusher be? We'll take a peek at that coming up. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Fan feedback question of the day. Would you be in favor of these proposed rules changes, at least one of them, that would move the snap for the point after touchdown to the 15-yard line, thus making the extra point now a 33-yard field goal attempt? In favor or not in favor of that? You can weigh in via Twitter at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Jaguars Today rolls on live from Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. You know, Tony, I've gotten several questions since the talk that Bruce Irvin of the Seahawks could be on the trading block, even prior to Dante Fowler's injury. Would the Jags be interested in Bruce Irvin? Obviously, play Leo and the Gus Bradley and now Dan Quinn defenses. Quinn going on to Atlanta to become the head coach there. So that defense continuing to produce some major decision makers. But the Seahawks declined to pick up his fifth-year option. And I think Bruce is a little bit salty about that right now, as the kids like to say. Actually, I don't know if the kids say that or not. They probably said it 10 years ago. But they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. As a first-round pick,
right,
as we know, you get a four-year contract with a club option for the fifth year. They have to exercise that option, and you get a pretty good chunk of money. Not exorbitant, but the Seahawks felt like, well, maybe he's not worth it, or maybe he is worth it, but we have Russell Wilson to re-sign. We've got other things, and you can't have everything you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's outrageous that the Jags could be interested in Bruce Irvin. You know, people have suggested, what would you give up for him? Well, I don't know, but part of the deal would be, I'm not interested in acquiring Bruce Irvin on a one-year rental basis for anything significant, right? I mean, now, if you talk like, I don't know, fifth-round pick, and you could argue, well, fifth-round picks are significant. Well, they should become less significant to this team, right? They most teams don't fret over what's happening in the fifth round. It doesn't mean you can't get good players. Doesn't mean they're not working just as hard to find those guys. But as your roster improves, those fifth round guys should have a harder time making that roster. So let's say you wanted to give up a fifth rounder. Not that Seattle would take that necessarily, but and bring in Bruce Irvin and hope that the culture here, reuniting with Gus Bradley in a similar role, having a big year, fall in love with Jacksonville, you know, no state income tax, all these wonderful things, that you'd have that opportunity to sell him
mm-hmm.
on sticking around. All right, I'd be okay with that. But Bruce Irvin apparently has his eyes set on joining Dan Quinn in Atlanta, as he was quoted by Black Sports Online as saying he wants to go to the Falcons after 2015. He says, quote, "I'm going to be in Atlanta next season. I'm ready. Atlanta is where I want to be. Believe that." That's a little, man. And by the way, he retweeted a tweet from Black Sports Online, the writer he spoke with. So he's not afraid to put that out there.
Right.
You don't see that very often, right? Where a guy
no.
will blatantly say, and you're playing on a team, and I get that he's probably bitter, I'm thinking, right? He's like, what am I supposed to do? I'm trying to play well here. We've had great team success. I think I've been a part of it. You won't pick up my fifth-year option. You don't think I'm worth anything. That's how they're going to think. That's how everybody thinks in that situation. So you want out, but boy, to just put it right out there, I'm gone. Here's where I'm playing next year. Believe that. Hey, Seattle. What do you do if you're the Seahawks? I mean, do you ratchet up efforts to get rid of him at all costs at this point in time? Because he can still help you win right now. Seattle, that window's still wide open for
them. Yeah. Yeah. Look, I don't know. And this is a story, these kinds of stories with Seattle are things we've been talking about since the brawl in the field at the end of the game in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots. We've been talking about the divisions that have just come to light within that locker room. And it was a lot about Marshawn Lynch versus Russell Wilson, and that there are anonymous players that are saying they felt like they were trying to prop up the golden boy in Russell Wilson. He's the coach's guy, and Marshawn Lynch should have got the ball, and the divisions in that locker room. They bring in a guy in Jimmy Graham who they had players on that team offering to fight in their playoff game against the New Orleans Saints. They were willing to fist fight Jimmy Graham, and now he's becoming a teammate for them in that locker room. How's that going to work out? They pay Marshawn Lynch. They're trying to figure out what's going to happen with Russell Wilson in that contract, and now you have Bruce Irvin saying, I'm gone.
I'm out of here, and here's where I'm going.
I'm out of here, and next year, I don't care. Essentially, what that says to me is, I don't care about Seattle. I'm not worried about 2015.
I'm
2016,
counting the days.
I'm going to be in Atlanta, right? Like, there's all these issues for Seattle to juggle right now for a team that has been in back-to-back Super Bowls, including winning one, and looks like one of the favorites in the NFC going into the 2015 season again. It feels like it's really fragile right now for the Seattle Seahawks, which is not something you expected when there were 45 seconds left in that Super Bowl.
And that's the thing, prosperity, man. I mean, guys start, it's all about the team. It's all about the team until it's not all about the team, because eventually everyone wants to be individually rewarded for that. It really is, to a large degree, pretty amazing how much the Patriots were able to tamp a lot of that down over the years. Maybe it was almost like public shaming if you dare suggested you wanted your own. Wes Welker, it was almost like they rewrote history to make Wes Welker this terrible guy because he wanted to get paid what his market value would dictate based on his production.
Right.
And they felt like, you know, we can replace you. And I think they were both right. Wes Welker got a pretty good deal from the Denver Broncos, and until the concussions continue to catch up with him, was pretty damn productive out in Denver. Certainly tailed off this past year, and the Patriots slid Julian Edelman into that position. When he was healthy, he was every bit in their offense what Wes Welker was to them, and they win another Super Bowl. So they're probably both right in that standpoint, but he's one of the few guys I can remember publicly, certainly, saying, hey, they're trying to lowball me here a little bit. And generally, always were given the perception that if a guy left New England, he wasn't about winning. He was about himself and about money. Well, guess what? They're all about money. It's easy for Tom Brady to take a little bit less when he's got millions upon millions in the bank, and he's got a wife who is rolling in it as well.
And he doesn't take less. He just takes a bigger chunk off the top.
Right.
He just gets paid more of that money up front so that it helps the team to sign other guys when they want to.
Good point. Because now, could Brady try to squeeze? I mean, Brady's got four Super Bowls. Put the whole Deflategate aside. Could Brady try to squeeze out more money out of the Patriots? He probably could. Right. So I'm not saying I agree with you. He's not Mother Teresa.
Right.
He's not leaving a ton
of money
out there.
And there are probably players in the league. Look, we've known Maurice Jones-Drew for years, right? Talking about contract negotiations, and I know it rubbed a lot of Jacksonville fans the wrong way, but players in the league want you to go get your money. Like, whatever your value is, they want you to go get that because it helps the next guy get a little bit more when it's their turn. So are there some guys around the league that watch what Tom Brady does? You know, if he is taking a little bit less than what Tom Brady may be worth as far as a quarterback in this league, when he takes a little bit less, does that hurt somebody else in their eyes? I don't know how players look at that kind of thing specifically. Now, look, Aaron Rodgers is getting paid. Peyton Manning is getting paid. It's certainly not hurting those guys' bottom line right now. But, look, he's trying to help the Patriots get in a better position to win. He's not taking any less money. He's just taking it all up front.
But, however, you know, the reason, I think one of the primary reasons Seattle's been able to be successful and sustain that success at that basically the same level, I mean, a play away from winning consecutive Super Bowls, that was pretty much sustaining it from one year to the next, is that they're still paying Russell Wilson third-round money.
Yep.
And, you know, as they're now getting into that range where they're said to be far apart, big money apart, that's going to be fascinating to watch. Do they? I mean, in the end, you can talk about building a system all you want. I don't think anybody here in Jacksonville thinks as good as a philosophy and a system and a culture that they're trying to put in place, Blake Bortles doesn't become the guy. You're not going to win at the highest level. You got to have that guy that can play at least, and or at least be like Eli Manning, who's got shown the ability multiple times throughout his career to get on a postseason run and a late season run where he can have an 8 or 10 week stretch where he plays his best football and he plays like the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. You got to be able to do that at least in the short term. Like Manning's been able to do. He's been more up and down, or be as consistently good as Russell Wilson has been, and Aaron Rodgers, and a handful of these other guys. Clearly Tom Brady with the four rings.
Sure. Look, we cover the Jags, so obviously that's the team that I'm paying the most attention to every year in the offseason. I knew, look, outside of Jacksonville, watching whatever was going to happen in Seattle after the fallout of that Super Bowl and everything else that you knew was going to be coming up this offseason with Marshawn Lynch and his contract, Russell Wilson and his contract, that was the team I was most interested in seeing how they handled this NFL offseason. And there seems to be more fires popping up for the Seattle Seahawks than they can handle right now. I wonder if it's almost going to be one of those where they just can't wait to get to the season, because that's going to be a bit of a sanctuary where we're not talking about Russell Wilson, we're not talking about Bruce Irvin, we're not talking about Marshawn Lynch, we're just going out and trying to win football games. Because right now it feels, from all the way across the country, like it's a little chaotic up there in Seattle.
All right, a couple minutes here quickly on some of Mel Kiper's rankings to keep an eye on for this upcoming college football season and guys that may be of note. First thing that jumps out at me as I look at Mel's big board at ESPN.com, updated yesterday, about 16 hours ago, it appears, is that I get that he's ranking the players where he thinks their value are or, you know, talent-wise to him, but I would lean towards more what Todd McShay did in his mock draft with the players. Like, he's got Christian Hackenberg. What a bad year at Penn State last year. But most people feel he is, you know, close to the prototype of a pro-style quarterback. He lost Bill O'Brien, so he lost his quarterback's coach there and his head coach at Penn State. We'll see how he bounces back this year, but he's got him ranked 11th. Whereas McShay's got him going number one in his mock draft for next year. I think it's going to be a lot closer to that. Connor Cook, he's got ranked 15th out of Michigan State, and McShay has him going number two. And so I think, you know, typically that's what you see, right? The quarterbacks get reached on a little bit. He's got Cardale Jones in at number 25, who's played all three games at Ohio State. Would have been fascinating. Where do you think Cardale Jones, when it all was shaken out, would have gone in this year's draft? I don't think he would have won any later than the second round, to be quite frank with you, because don't you think he was a more intriguing prospect just based on what you didn't know about him than Brett Hundley and Bryce Petty and all these guys that had plenty of tape that you could pick their flaws apart?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, certainly the quarterback class wasn't all that great. So the idea that Cardale Jones could be, you know, that guy that it's like, let's see what this guy has, and you really weren't going to find out till you got him in your building. Because even the combine, all that stuff, it's not going to show you much about Cardale Jones. So we'll see where he winds up here in the next year or two.
Mel's got Joey Bosa out of Ohio State, the number one player in the country, defensive end. And I wonder,
if that's the one.
Oh, I wonder if it is, right? If that's the guy that Dave Caldwell thinks is the first-round value. There's Emmanuel Ogbah out of Oklahoma State. Mel's got as a top 10 player. There are a handful of guys in his top 25 that are defensive ends, but it's not littered with them, I wouldn't say, as far as that goes. And that is one of the things that the Jags said they considered when taking Fowler. You got to look at, much like Blake Bortles. Dave Caldwell said infamously after the draft last year, we felt if he had gone back to UCF and played another year and continued to develop as we had seen him develop on the college football field, that he'd be the number one quarterback prospect in the draft next year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in position to get him. Let's get him now, and let's develop him ourselves. Finally, Mel has Vernon Hargraves out of Florida, the cornerback, ranked fifth overall, which what he says is what he lacks in size, he makes up for in instincts and effortless fluidity in moving with receivers. He's not that small, really, at 5'11 and 195. I think he would have been the top cornerback taken in the 2015 draft if available. And this isn't just projection. He's played in 24 games. He's already picked off six passes before his junior season. McShay had him going to the Jags. So we're in for, I guess, no matter what they do this year, we're in for another offseason of cornerback being the Jags' biggest need on this football team. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out.
I guess so. It is interesting, by the way, for those that ask, you know, what's the point? Really, we're going to look at a big board for next year. It is interesting to point out, Mel Kiper at the beginning of this article talked about the guys that he had in his top 10 last year on his big board and what it wound up looking like in the draft. Well, at number one, he had Jameis Winston, who obviously went number one. Marcus Mariota, who was drafted second overall, was number four on his big board a year ago. Leonard Williams was number five on his board. Amari Cooper, six. Brandon Scherff, 7. Dante Fowler Jr., 8. Andres Pete, 9. And he also had Randy Gregory and Cedric Abui both in there as well. So it was pretty much dead on as far as the top 10 prospects last year, at least, generally stayed the top 10 prospects throughout a year. I don't know how consistent that is on a year-to-year basis, but at least last year was right around it.
Pete slid out of the top 10, right? Eric Flowers went to the Giants at 9, and a lot of people thought the Rams would take Pete, and they ended up taking Todd Gurley. But that is a pretty good top 9 when he had Cedric Abui in at number 2 and Randy Gregory in at number 3, and he credits Abui's fall completely to his knee injury. I think his draft stock may have slipped a little prior to that anyway, but it didn't fall too drastically. Gregory lasted to the 60th pick, obviously, because of whatever his cocktail of off-the-field issues happen to be. But I'll give Mel credit. That's a pretty good one from last year. I'd like to see him highlight some of the ones where he swung and missed as well. I'm sure he's done that over time. All right, we will come back. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Asking you today, a lot of proposals out there to change the point after touchdown in the National Football League. Would you be in favor of one of the proposals that has the snap being taken from the 15-yard line? In other words, make an extra point, a 33-yard field goal. We'll take a look at some of the responses we got to that and take a few of your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. I should note, earlier, Ocho Fisho tweeted us about Gino Capoletti. We were like, hey, how did he score all those two-point conversions in the 60s? Duh, he played in the AFL. AFL allowed the two-point conversion. All those records stand as NFL records after the merger. So that makes tons of logical sense. Thank you, Ocho Fisho. All right, we will get to the Fan Feedback Spotlight momentarily, asking you today whether or not you'd be in favor of a rule change that would have the snap on a PAT move back to the 15-yard line, thus making it a 33-yard field goal, the equivalent for an extra point. You know, some people answered it yes or no. A lot of people added their own little spin on that, so we'll get to that coming up. 641-1010, the number is always also the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. 641-1010. Let's go to Jerome, hanging on the line here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning, good morning. How y'all doing this morning?
Good, what's up?
I would say keep the extra point in the game. Back them up a little bit, but make the goalposts smaller, where it's more harder to get in. Make it more, you know what I mean, more challenging.
Narrower goalposts, you're saying?
Yeah, narrower goalposts, where they ain't so wide. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, though, I just want your opinion on this. And this is, I'm a fan of the football, of NFL football, and a Jag fan, right?
Okay.
But I called and I talked to Fat Tony one time, the other day, right?
Uh-oh, and this sounds like a setup, Tony.
Yeah, this is a setup.
Go ahead, Jerome.
I want to face Tom Brady. I'd rather Tom Brady be back when we play him, because being a Jack fan, I want the best. You know what I mean? I still want to beat up on Tom Brady. And I feel like to be the best, you got to beat the best. Yeah, you got Jimmy Garoppolo. Yeah, you can, if you really want to, but I don't want to win like that. I want to win with the best on the field. You see what I'm saying? And plus, it'd be like a good measuring stick for us.
I do see what you're saying. I don't think it's crazy. But let me ask you this question. And you can't know this, but this is hypothetical. Would you rather lose a tough-fought game to a Tom Brady-led Patriots team or win a game versus a Jimmy Garoppolo-led Patriots team?
Oh, man, I got it.
The correct answer is win. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got to win, yeah.
You got to win, right? Now, I get what you're saying. If you can beat Brady, then you've beaten the best, and you'd feel better about it. And I get that. And as a fan, if you're just a fan of football, you want to see these great matchups, Tony. I get that. But
sure,
if you're giving me the choice, do I want to – look, I'm not asking for Tom Brady to be hurt or suspended, but if he is suspended, I'm not going to shed a tear.
Yeah.
I'd rather the Jags play the Patriots without Tom Brady, because I think it gives them a clear-cut better chance to win.
Absolutely. Gives them a better chance to win. And look, if they got the opportunity to play Brady a little bit again later in the year, January, that'd be sweet.
Right here, Jacksonville.
Right.
Because they won the first one and therefore have the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Take that.
Give me Jimmy Garoppolo.
Hey, look, in the end, you look back and you look at instances of key players getting hurt in the postseason or the playoffs and the Super Bowl even. And teams beat somewhat depleted teams, or they're missing a star. Do those championships, do you think they count any less? Or do you think they look back and say, man, but we didn't play so-and-so? Look, these players aren't ducking Tom Brady. But any realist is going to say, defending Super Bowl champs in their house early in the season, presuming everyone's healthy at that point, going to be tough sledding for a team that's won 9 games in the last 3 years. Not impossible. And that's, I guess, why you want to see it, because you want to see them beat Tom Brady. They're capable of beating Tom Brady and the Patriots. They are.
Yeah.
But the likelihood, if you're just being honest, is not great, just based on where the two franchises are right now.
Not compared to playing Jimmy Garoppolo.
The likelihood of any team going to New England and beating a Tom Brady-led Patriots team is not great, because they're very good. They're among the best teams in the league, and playing at home seems to matter to some degree. So,
yes,
you know, and when you take a team that's been picking in the top 3 for the last few years, you think the odds get a little bit longer than they would for some others making
yeah,
that visit.
I'm going through my head and all the ways that it becomes more difficult to beat the Patriots when they're playing at home. Just all the different things that seem to happen
yes.
when the Patriots play
telecommunications.
At home. Right.
Air pressure and the like. Moving on. All right. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you to weigh in on the rule change proposals, which three of them are out there. And so I would think there's some decent support for one of these at least getting adopted. But all of them center around the extra point snap being moved back to the 15, thus making it a 33-yard field goal. What did people have to say about that?
From Isaiah, we got nope. Said hashtag Pat's cheat. From Irish Jaguar, I don't think it'll make much of a difference, so sure, why not? From Ocho Ficho, if an NFL kicker can't make a 32-yarder, then he shouldn't be. Then should he be in the league? Hashtag looking at you, Morton, after our open today. Also from Irish Jack, however, I really hope the rule allowing the defense to return a muffed or block kick for 2 points passes, and I got a feeling it probably will. From Brian, yes, but make it hash mark relevant. That's something that we were talking about earlier today, where it goes, you basically put the ball in towards whatever hash they actually scored that touchdown on to make it a little more difficult. From Paolo, yes, it could incentivize teams to go for two, making the game more exciting. From Cristiano, it would be interesting to see the trickle-down effect on coaches' game management with some kicks missed. From Eric, just leave it alone. Ain't broke. Don't fix it. I don't get that one. From AG Jag fan, yes, until Scobie misses one. From Demetrius, I would in a heartbeat. Specialists need to be challenged more, and it would add an element of intrigue to late games. And from Black Dog Express, how about having an extra point if the kicker puts the ball through the uprights on the following kickoff? So we got all kinds of rules coming in.
That would be fun, too. That would have been a fun XFL kind of rule, right? I don't know if any kickers in the XFL had the leg to get it through the uprights, but it certainly would have been interesting to see, and that's a definite home field advantage when you're playing at altitude. Jamie Clark on Facebook said, we got Scobie, we good. Adrian Jackson said he misread the question. I wrote the PATs, right? He says, I thought you said, would you be in favor of a rule that moves the Pats back to their own 15-yard line? I think maybe it's a little harsh to send them to their own 15 after every play. It might be a fitting punishment for Deflategate and the attitude of the team to the investigation
that
went along with it.
Hilarious. Like, if on every touchback this year, the Pats started from the 15.
Right. Would you rather? How about that? Would you rather take that as a penalty, or would you rather have that fourth round pick back?
Right.
What do you think? I mean, honestly, what do you think would be more significant? I would think.
I would think the 15.
I would think the 15, right? Because it could be. I mean, how many touchbacks? Touchbacks are up in frequency because of moving the kickoff up again, and
there'd be pressure on you to probably return more kicks than you had been because you want
right.
to improve that field position. Yeah.
Right. Well, why not if you only have to get it out to the 15-yard line?
Yeah,
to
either that or let the opposing kicker always gets to kick it from the 40.
Something like that, right.
He always gets some advantage.
Some on-field penalty for that. Richard Grant wants to leave it as it is. So does Chris Wayne. Johnny Crump said he'd be in favor of making the snap all the way back to the 35. Make the kickers do some work. And look, it's never going to have 100% consensus on one of these deals. By the way, somebody who says any kicker who can't make a 33-yarder shouldn't be in the league. All right, what's tougher? Shooting a free throw? Now, we know there's some bad free throw shooters. If you take the best kicker and the best free throw shooter,
uh-huh.
and you line them up side by side. Now, granted, to give proper rest and recovery time, because kicking takes more out of your leg than you can shoot free throws all day. But over a comparable spaced out period, the best free throw shooter in the NBA shooting 100 free throws, or the best field goal kicker kicking 33-yard field goals 100 times. What are the make-miss percentages?
Well, your free throw percentage is going to be probably somewhere in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s, right? They're going to miss maybe up to 5
somewhere
in there.
If
you're the best.
5 to 7.
You think Steph Curry at the line, you think he's automatic. But it's shooting 100, you're not going to make them all. So
30-yard field goals, I imagine the best kicker in the league is in 100 attempts. That's a ton of attempts.
It's a lot of attempts.
It's about the same. Would
probably
be my
about
guess.
The same if you're talking about those conditions where you're out on a practice field. If you add in the elements of playing outdoors, having a rush coming after you, having to get the snap and the hold down, certainly that percentage, I think, would dip down. And the pressure of that, not that there's not pressure in making big free throws.
Yeah, there's a whole lot more that can go wrong on a kick than there is on a free throw. Like, you're standing at the line, you know the conditions of the free throw. You don't know the conditions of the kick every time because there is a snap, there is a hold, there is a defense.
All right, Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, featuring Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. Let's get a couple calls in under the wire. Dalton, next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dalton.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's up?
I just wanted to touch on the whole extra point thing. I think while the kicker is a necessity in this game, I think it's one of the biggest flaws of football. Just because for 59 minutes and 57 seconds, you had these 200, 300-pound guys battling against each other. And then at the very end of the game, you're going to have a kicker go in there, kick a 40-yard kick, and just basically determine the game. I just think moving the kickoff back to the wherever 30-some yards can potentially, you know, create difference in this game where all of a sudden kickers are determining the outcomes of the game way more than they used to. And I just think, you know, we've been touching and tweaking the game so much these last few years. Like, if you look at the game and compare it back to 50 years ago, it's obviously a whole different language now. I just can't even imagine how many different changes they're going to make and what this game's going to look like in 50 years. So that's all I
got to
say.
All right, thanks, man. Well, you know, we probably won't have to worry about it all that much, I'm guessing. You know, knock on wood, maybe you will. I probably won't. But granted, the NFL would say we're more popular than ever, right? I mean,
sure.
TV ratings, everything. I mean, revenue through the roof. So whatever we're doing is in partly in a response to public tastes. And not everyone's always going to be happy about it. I'm sure there are a lot of people like you that or older than you. You didn't sound that old, but, you know, guys that grew up watching football in the 60s who think that they don't recognize the game the way it's played today. And that's fine. You know what? It changes. Times change.
It does. Quickly, I'm looking at the numbers for kickers just last year on kicks of 30 to 39 yards. You had 14 kickers attempt 10 or more field goals in that range. Two of them made all those kicks.
From what range?
From 30 to 39. So
only two of them
of the 14
kickers
that attempted 10 or more from that kind of range, only two of them made all their kicks in that range. So they're missing those kicks.
You definitely have some misses. Now, keep in mind, those are field goals that do get set on the hash marks.
Sure.
As opposed to presumably an extra point being lined up right in the middle of the field. So would make it a little bit easier. But, yeah, you definitely, there would be an impact. What degree? To be determined. All right, if we didn't get to you, we apologize. We're out of time today. XL Primetime coming up on the other side. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today signing off here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.